Hello, fellow Trailblazers. Lebitso la ka ke Dukiso TK Ntebe. I am a financial wellness coach, travel enthusiast, blogger, and founder of TKO Consultancy. Welcome to Escapes and Money Adventures with TK, a podcast for the young African who's determined to travel, explore, and get their personal finances right. Willing to have a better relationship with your money while visiting interesting travel destinations? Well, this podcast is for you. Hello, fellow Trailblazers. Welcome to Escapes and Money Adventures with TK. And you know I always bring you fresh, exciting, relevant, and educational content. So in today's episode, we're going to talk about a very important and also very controversial topic. As you all know, gender-based violence has become a global pandemic. And according to the UN Women 2020 report, one in three women in Lesotho are victims or experiencing intimate partner violence. And to have this conversation today, I have a dear friend of mine, colleague, I don't know how many titles I need to attach to that. I get to speak to Dikele Dimunyama. But before we get into the conversation today, and before she tells us who she is for people who may not know her, I was reading her article in The Reporter, and I was baffled by the statistics, you know. According to the report, or some of the statistics you shared, 675 million Maluti in household income is reduced as a result of gender-based violence. Those statistics are shocking. So let's get into the conversation and let's help me welcome Dikeledi to Money Adventures with TK. Her and I have been wanting to do this podcast for the last 2 years. So I'm really excited to have you here. Welcome. And tell us about who you are.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, TK. Really an honor. We've been wanting to do this for a long time. So I'm glad that we're doing it for a topic that's very close to my heart. Mm-hmm. I'm Dikeledi. And I call myself a multi-potentialite.
I love that word.
Which is
well.
A term, I love it too, because when I discovered that term, it really helped explain the type of person that I am. So I have a lot of interests. I have a lot of different ways that I want to show my creativity and my passion. So on the one hand, I'm a very technical finance person with a finance and boring, that type of boring background. And then on the other side, I love writing. I love reading and I love, you know, reviewing books. And I love teaching. I think that's the biggest passion of mine. So I founded a number of initiatives that help me, you know, express these passions of mine. So we have Inspire Innovation, which is a business consultancy that also has a mentorship program as part of its learning and development initiatives. Our slogan there is build people, build a nation.
I love that tagline, actually. I love that.
And then we have Keep Lesotho Clean, which is an environmental sustainability organization that I am really passionate about advancing as well. And then, yeah, I have other things that I'm involved
and
in.
The one question I always want to ask, now that I have you on camera, is where do you get that
the time?
Because there's Keep Lesotho Clean, there's Inspire, you also incorporate, you also write for a column, you also have a column that you recently started, you read a lot of books, and I was watching your WhatsApp statuses, my current read, my next read, I'm like, I'm struggling to finish just one book. How do you go about it?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, I've always been like that, you know, from growing up, I would be doing debate, I would do sports, I played netball for the Free State.
For the Free State province at that.
Yes, and then I was really excelling at school. And I think we're just wired differently as people. And I think I have a lot of energy and I have to find ways to express that energy. And how I've come to really be effective in the things that I'm doing now is I have a team. You know, I learned when I was in Ireland, I attended Shape Europe, which is a global shapers initiative. And I remember this guy was talking about how he had done all these inventions, but that he didn't really do them. His team had done them. And he was driving home the point that, you know, you can only go so far if you work alone and you just do things on your own. So I work with a team of people that work at Inspire at Keep Lesotho Clean. We have a whole team of co-founders, directors, and volunteers. So that's how I really get a lot done. Mm-hmm. And I'm also really passionate about developing other people as I go along. So I'm not so much, I'm not obsessed about building myself as a brand and as a, what can I say? I'm not obsessed about being the one that's in front of every initiative that I do and being the one that's seen, you know. Some things I really want to hand over to other people, and the sooner I can do that, the better.
The better.
Yeah, so that's really how I get to be involved in a lot of things.
So today's conversation really centers around, well, gender-based violence, but more specifically on financial abuse, you know. And I think when people think about gender-based violence, it's either physical or emotional, and the financial aspect of it, we often aren't aware of it, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe to kickstart the conversation is, for the layman watching or the ordinary person, what is financial abuse in your view?
Yes, thank you for that. So gender-based violence, as you rightly say, has a lot of different types of abuses within it. So there's intimate partner violence that you spoke about, there's domestic violence, there is now financial abuse as well, emotional abuse, physical, sexual abuse. So financial abuse is another form of abuse, mm-hmm. right? And financial abuse can actually happen to male or females. But the reason why, as with the other abuses, we're focusing on the women aspect of it is because it happens more to women than men. So financial abuse is an abuse where somebody that has power and authority over someone's resources uses that to exploit them or to control them. So what it looks like practically is, for example, if people are in a married relationship and then let's say the husband earns a lot of money and they control when the wife goes to buy sanitary towels, they control when the wife can get their hair done. So they really use money as a means to control them and to make the other person lack independence. So in a nutshell,
lack independence. And I think for me, the word independence stands out because finance or money gives you freedom to choose where you want to go and how you want to spend your money.
Yeah.
So the moment that independence is taken away from you, you sort of kind of become very vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know. So you've mentioned how it happens. What are some of the, what's the word I'm looking for? What's the impact on the
yeah.
person who's being financially abused?
Yes.
Like, how does that play out? And and for me, before you get into that question, is debt, you know? So we're in a marriage, and I just go out and I spend and swipe that credit card, mm-hmm. and you're not even aware. So what are some of the other ways that people can be financially abused,
yeah.
aware or unaware?
Yeah. Okay, so I'll start with the ways that, you know, people can be abused. There are a lot of ways. So on the one hand, you have, like I said, somebody that earns more money and controls the finances. On the other hand, you can have somebody that maybe, you know, as a woman, the woman is making more money, but now the man controls the bank account. The man, everything is in the name of the man, you know, because, you know, he's the man and he's the leader of the home.
Mm.
And he doesn't use that responsibly as well. So this woman has to take on more debt because they want to build a house or they want to do this. And then this man, the debt is in the woman's name, but all the other nice things are in the man's name. So the impact of financial abuse is emotional, first of all, because you're, number one, you're not an independent person with autonomy.
Mm.
So as a person, every adult has to have autonomy. You know, even kids, I shouldn't just say adults, but every person has to have their own voice, their own say. I wanna get up and get, you know, if I wanna buy sanitary towels, I think it's such a big one, that one. I wanna get up and go and buy sanitary towels. If I decide, oh, I'd love to have lunch, I'd like to go out and have lunch, every person should be able to make that decision for themselves, right? So the impacts of financial abuse are emotional, and it is reported that a lot of times financial abuse doesn't go alone. It goes hand
yes.
in hand with other types
yes.
of abuses. So
yes.
it's with physical abuse. In 99% of cases, these are American statistics, of course, but in 99% of cases where there's physical abuse, there is also financial abuse. So it means it goes hand in hand with other abuses. And the whole idea, I think, behind abuse is you make someone feel worthless. You make them feel like with financial abuse, you make someone feel like they can't do anything without you. Mm. If they leave you, they're gonna suffer, you know? So this person really feels so dependent on you. They can't make their own decisions. Another form of financial abuse is where someone does not allow the other person to develop themselves. So if I have, like, I'm a wife and I'm not working and I say, I'd like to get a job or I want to improve myself, go back to school, you know, then the husband says, no, you can't get a better job because you're going to earn more than me, or I don't allow you to go to school. And these are things that are so prevalent mm-hmm. in our community. The reason for that is because a patriarchal society depends on one, someone dominating the other. Uh-huh. In most cases, the man dominating the woman. Yes. So it means the way we raise our kids up, our girls, the way we structure marriage, it creates an environment where this type of abuse can happen, because it's always that someone must control the other. Uh-huh. You know, we always make jokes around, I want to be the rich aunt. You know, when I go to funerals, I must just get there.
The rich auntie.
And so, yeah, you know, we know the rich auntie vibe or the rich auntie curry catcher, right? So with financial abuse, you know, it's the same thing where someone controls the resources. And we live in a society that elevates that. If you have money, you can make choices.
When the rich auntie or the rich uncle gets there with the money, then decisions are made and nothing happens before that.
Then another aspect of it is just the one that you touched on a little bit, the economic sort of control. Mm-hmm. So where somebody takes debt in your name, somebody sometimes even doing things that you're not aware that they're doing, sort of committing fraud, but they probably won't see it as fraud because, you know, this is my wife. Mm-hmm. So somebody taking on debt without telling you, when that's going to affect you. A lot of people in Lesotho are married in community of property.
Ah, yes.
Right?
Yes.
You talk about this. Yeah. So when you're married in community of property and someone doesn't inform you that they are taking on debt or they are making financial decisions without telling you, that are going to have an impact on you. I'm passionate about this subject because I've lived it. You know, when a parent dies, that's when you find out, you know, these things. You find out that the other one had taken on debt. Now the other remaining one must, you know,
service the debt.
You understand? Mm-hmm. Or someone, you know, falls sick and you realize they are working, but they don't have medical aid, or, you know, things that really put a burden on another person and you don't inform them. Sometimes where you have a policy, you know that you're, as a family, you have an insurance policy or something, and then a person goes and changes the beneficiaries of that policy without telling you, right? That constitutes financial abuse.
And I think you've mentioned the policy changing beneficiaries. What I've also seen is, from a pension perspective, mm-hmm. people are changing the nominations of the beneficiaries without the consent of the spouse.
Yes.
And it's always so shocking to see that. How do you make such a decision? And the second thing that you also mentioned, especially for people who are married in community of property. Mm-hmm. So from my banking experience, when you want to apply for a loan facility with the bank, mm-hmm. you need consent from the spouse. Mm-hmm. And many a time, people just sign without really asking, what am I signing for? So mm-hmm. I've seen wives particularly sign in those forms, but they don't really know what's the debt being taken for, what's the amount, where is it going to be used, why feel like a sign on. Even she just signs and goes, and you know. So those are
really, because that means that person doesn't have a voice. Mm-hmm. So there's that now, the authority, where a man says, and you don't you dare ask what that is, right? Mm-hmm. And people have really found themselves in very sticky situations. Ibe, the bank says, but there's your signature, so you can't even deny and say, I didn't understand
what I was signing. And for me, you mentioned earlier on kids coming into the picture, but also on the other side of the spectrum are adults, or elders rather, who are also victims of financial abuse.
Yes.
How did they become victims of financial abuse? Yeah.
So as we know, I mean, elders, when somebody grows older, you know, they sort of, it's like the cycle, the life cycle is reversed. So they become more and more dependent on caregivers. And in our culture, we know that we don't have like homes, you know, where people, if they're older, they can go to a home or anything like that. So it means they depend on other family members to take care of them. So financial abuse is where a child goes and withdraws, you know, pension, a parent's pension, and they spend it without their consent. Mm. And this person really doesn't have anywhere to go to complain about that. Where the, you know, and financial abuse for elders can happen, you know, within the family members. And statistics show that it's more prevalent with family members, but it can also happen with external people. So the bank knows, or someone at a bank knows, that this person is now an elder and doesn't really have anybody to advise them. So they start advising them to put their investments in weird places. You know, you see transactions that you're not sure what is going on with this person's transactions. Mm. And once again, changing of beneficiaries as well. When people maybe they have dementia because they are old, or they are incapacitated in some way. So somebody that has power and access to this person's finances starts abusing and exploiting them.
Mm, sure, guys, these are hectic conversations. And I just love how we're breaking it down into simple examples. So for me, there's a whole bunch of stakeholders that can be, you know, concerned about financial abuse. So for stakeholders, the business community, the government, us as a community and society, what can we do to support in instances where we see financial abuse happening, or in cases where we are the perpetrator? What can we do to change the narrative?
Yeah. So I think, first of all, the reason why we're having this conversation is because this is, financial abuse is not something that is spoken of, that is understood. And also, it's not easy to spot, right? Mm. So first of all, I think the responsibility that we have as a new generation, you know, of Basotho, or the current generation of Basotho, is to start talking about it. What does it look like, you know? Because just this conversation is gonna make a lot of people realize that either I am abusing my position as a parent, as a husband, or a wife, you know, to control someone else, or a child, like as a child to my parent. Yeah, I'm using that position to control this person, and that's not right. You know, it's financial abuse. So, or someone is gonna say, I am in a relationship, or a, you know, in an entanglement where I am abused, or I'm experiencing abuse. And what I don't really want this conversation to be, it's not about labeling people or husbands or wives as abusers. What we're saying is that the way we are used to building our society creates an environment where abuse can happen. Mm. And what can we do now that we know, what can we do to empower ourselves? Mm. So if you're a husband and maybe you didn't know, maybe you felt, I have so much responsibility, you know, I need to know where every cent is going. How can you do that in a way that doesn't remove the dignity of, you know, your wife? Mm. And if you're a wife, sometimes wives do it, you know, when they have more money, they now feel like, no, I'm the only one that has a say in this household about anything money related. How do we now create relationships where people feel like they have equal say? And if someone feels burdened, they can have a conversation and say, listen, don't you think it's time for you to get a job? I mean, I saw a video where Buiti was saying she wants someone to give her $450,000
a month.
That's too much pressure. Yeah. You know, it's too much pressure for women to sit at home and think someone else will do the work for me.
And $450 is a lot of money. Like,
that's ridiculous, you know? Of course. But there are women that feel that the man is responsible to give them money, to create a life for them that they want. And that's not the right way of thinking about it. Mm. And I think one of the things we need to question as a culture is, when you are an adult, you are autonomous. You must be autonomous, whether you are at someone's child or someone's wife or someone's boyfriend or girlfriend. you need to be autonomous. You need to have your own voice. You need to have your own opinions. Just because we are married, even if we're married in community of property, doesn't mean, you know, we want the same things. And, you know, so we need to have those conversations. And then we now need to say, okay, what are the signs of financial abuse? So where someone feels they can't make decisions, they are scared to make decisions, they have to produce receipts for everything. You know, on the flip side, you know, we have people that spend money, grocery money on alcohol. So that's also not okay.
Or school fees.
Yeah, school fees, money on things that they shouldn't be spending on. You know, even women are guilty of overspending and not really thinking about, you know, where's the next meal gonna come from. So there are some women that are like that. And then there are men, for example, who spend on alcohol and all of that. So these are conversations that we should have. So, and then we need to identify the signs so that we can start diagnosing the problem.
And I think in your recent column article, you spoke about the business community also being very silent on gender-based violence and specifically to the topic of today, financial abuse. So why should the
business community care? Yeah, so I think the point I was trying to raise there was, firstly, gender-based violence has an economical impact. You know, I lost my mom when I was 11 to intimate partner violence. And that meant, first of all, I need to rely on someone else. You know, my grandmother raised me. She had her own life plan. And now all of a sudden, I'm her responsibility. And it, the impact of gender-based violence is that people are at risk of, like, the kids that are affected might not, you know, have an opportunity to go to school. That means you now have a burden on the system, on someone that will be dependent on the system for a long time. There's health. Right, that health, people need health or medical attention. There's legal, you know, the cost of legal services and legal battles. We know with the recent case of Katabile Mufolo, for example, where it was a gender-based violence issue. And then you can also tell that there was a bit of financial abuse there that even involved the in-laws, right? Because how can someone be killed for 20 maluti? Yeah, so the impact now is now they must go to court. Now the courts, which are already overloaded with cases, must now handle this
and
case.
And prioritize this one because now it's like a
Because now it's an emergency. This person must be buried. My mother, for example, was also buried with a court order, you know, because the someone didn't want her to get buried on time. So those things have an impact on the economy. You spoke about the reduction in household income. When household income reduces, business is affected because people are not spending money. So if we look at where people congregate, where do people go? People go to work every day. They go to churches every Sunday. Kids go to school, right? So these are organizations that are very well positioned to prevent gender-based violence and to also provide support where there is gender-based violence. So that's my point, is that as a business community, we cannot be so silent, because if the statistics say 33% of women in Lesotho experience intimate partner violence, those 33% are people in your workplace.
Absolutely. So, and for me, when you say that, it now brings in absenteeism,
loss of productivity,
lack of productivity, and obviously that affects your bottom line as a company and an organization. My goodness. And at a policy level, what are your views around what the government should also be doing to try make a big difference when it comes to gender-based violence, specifically? Well, let me not say specifically, because
but
financial
we're focusing
abuse
on
is,
financial
you know,
abuse. So I think when I, you know, when I was doing a bit of research on the subject, I realized that in a lot of countries, there's actually support, there's helplines, there's organizations that provide financial advice, for example. So there's sort of this like ecosystem of help that people can get for different types of abuses, including financial abuse. So for the elderly, for example, like financial institutions provide advice, they sort of take care of them if they realize that there's no one that's really helping them at home. So we need an approach, a multi-sectoral approach, actually, where the government makes policies, they make requirements maybe for the financial sector to help where someone has been financially abused, where financial support even, you know, where we have grants or funds for people to pick themselves up. So one of the things is, when you're financially abused, it's harder for you to leave a violence or gender-based violence situation because you depend on that person. Mm. So how are you gonna leave if you need to buy a bus ticket to leave that place, you know, and that person needs to give you the money? So if we have support at work, if you have a space at work where you can say, I'm experiencing this difficulty, then they start probing and find out that you have your abused financially, then there should be interventions, specific, interventions that they provide.
Yeah. And I think just in closing, just like me, you are a big advocate for women empowerment, financial wellness and financial literacy. You know, now bringing financial literacy and financial education into the conversation, what should the business sector specifically do from a wellness perspective?
Financial wellness programs. Mm. So financial wellness programs should not be seen as separate from gender-based violence topics. When we talk about gender-based violence, we don't always have to talk about it under the topic of gender-based violence. If you have a financial literacy program, include, you know, financial abuse in that program. Okay. And it also shows that the issues that people face are all related. So as part of the wellness, we're now doing mental health, physical health, financial health. All these things can address gender-based violence and empower women.
And then your closing remarks, for somebody who's watching this video, podcast, reading the article that you and I are going to co-create, is what do we say to them? If, for example, I am a perpetrator and I was not aware and this conversation opens up my mind, what do we say? Or you've been experiencing financial abuse, what's your call to action for people who are listening to the podcast, watching the video and reading the article?
Yeah, so I'll start first with people that may realize from reading, from listening to this, that they may be abusing someone, or they may be creating an environment where the other person is experiencing abuse or the detrimental effects. So the first thing is, these things are related to other things, so get help. Get counseling as a family, or as a couple if it's, you know, non-married couples. Get help. Seek help so that you can heal. There's a reason why you want to control other people. Mm. And probably that control also expresses itself in other areas, not just finances. So the thing with finances is you can't take it. It's not a separate subject. Yeah, so get help. Mm. And then somebody that might feel like they're in an abusive relationship, they are the victim of abuse, they need to get help. They can't, you know, go through it alone. They need to find someone that can help them. And they need to take steps to really start that empowerment. So sometimes people are in such dangerous situations that they need to start saving on the side. They need to sort of start planning like an exit so that there can be that disruption of the cycle. And then maybe come back again, you know, to their husband or wife or whatever partner. But there needs to be an interruption of what's going on. Seek help, seek counseling, and family and friends, we should not keep quiet. Mm. We need to ask people, are you okay? I was reading that a lot of the times when people seek help, when you say, are you under financial abuse, they'll of course say no. Mm. But if you say, are you able to, you know, take care of your immediate needs? Then they'll be like, no, I need to ask my husband. Mm. Then those probing questions can make someone realize that they are actually in trouble, even if they didn't realize it. So I think that it's such a prevalent issue that a lot of us have experienced it one way or another. Even parents that say, I'm not gonna buy you school uniform if you don't do this. Mm. That's abuse, because these are basic necessities that a parent should do for their child. Mm. So I think we've all experienced it somehow. So let's talk about it. Let's, you know, do more research and empower ourselves so that we can change the cycle as a society.
Wow. And where do people find you? I know you're very active on social media, though sometimes you're just like, but yeah. Where, if people want to connect with you, either for booking or, I mean, you're doing a lot of things, like you mentioned earlier on. So where do people find you and connect with you?
Yeah, so I'm really active. I'm very active on Facebook, Dikele Dimputlane Monyamane. I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. And, you know, our websites, you'll see, you know, our companies on social media. You can follow our companies online. And yeah, pretty much Google me. I don't know why you say Google me. I'm also Googleable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll also link all her social media platforms in the description box below, including her company, Inspire Innovation Business Consultants. So if you are watching, listening, or reading the article, which I'll also link in the description box below, don't be shy to leave a comment. Let us know what you think about this conversation. And if you've been a perpetrator of financial abuse, or you're a victim of financial abuse, let us know also what you thought about this conversation and how you managed to get yourself out of that situation, or what you plan to do to get out of that situation. A quick disclaimer before we step out: DK Lady is not a financial advisor. If you are looking for financial advice, please speak to somebody qualified. I am a financial coach. I am not a financial advisor. But yes, that's a quick disclaimer. Yes. And this does not constitute as financial advice. Again, if you're looking for financial advice, please speak to somebody who's qualified and registered. And thank you so much for listening to Escapes and Money Adventures with TK. Looking forward to the next conversation. And a big thank you to DK Lady for coming out on a Saturday afternoon to come. And again, I'm committing her on camera. This is one of many, because her and I have so much content we need to discuss. So at least it started.
Yeah.
So 2022, we are going hard and we are creating this amazing content that we'll share with you. So thank you, and remember to like, comment, and subscribe. Love, peace, and money. Cheers, guys. You've been listening to Escapes and Money Adventures with TK. I want to hear from you. Don't be shy to leave a comment, share, and subscribe. Money is an adventure. Let's enjoy the ride.